Hello, this is the Pacifica National Board Elections Committee meeting for Sunday, July 16th, 2006. And we are about to begin the meeting. In the absence of the chair, this is Carolyn Burden, the chair. In the absence of the secretary, temporarily, I will call the roll.
Point of information, who's going to be taking the minutes of this meeting?
Well, I think we'll have to let Mary do it from the audio. If she did say she would be here, I know she was at a meeting that ran late. LaVon, do you think the meeting is going to end soon, your board meeting?
Just a second. It ended at about 4:30, 4:45, but there's some issues at the end of the meeting that caused a continuation of what was going on. So hopefully she'll be back at home within the next, I'll say 15 minutes or so.
All right, I think we can work along there and she can pick up from the audio.
I'll try to call her also.
Thank you. All right, Mary is not here. Carolyn Burden is here. Jane Gatewood. Terry Goodman.
Here.
Yeah. Patty Heffley. Here. We heard her. Melinda Arledon. Melinda.
Here.
Okay. Richard Phelps. Not here. Serene Roberts. Deb Shafto. Zarina Shakir. Harrison Weil.
I'm here.
Good. Ted Weiskall.
Here.
Don White. LaVon Williams. And Carol Wolf.
Here.
All right. And Les Radke is here.
Here.
Art was here and left. Thank you, Les. All right. I think
Patty, did you call Patty?
We did, Patty. And
thank you.
Since I'd asked you to mute, I answered for you.
Yeah, I'm muting. Okay.
All right. Thank you. Now, the agenda, there was a draft agenda circulated. Does everybody have a copy?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Are there any, let me go over that. The next meeting, I've been informed, well, shall I read it first, or should we just go over, approve it as such? I'm sorry? Some people are not muted. People, please mute yourselves if you're going to have other conversations. Thank you.
Wolf, moving approval of the agenda.
Does everyone have a copy of the agenda? And Ted, you wanted to add an item to the agenda?
Yeah, a review of the minutes of selected KPFT election committee minutes from 2004 for the purpose of assessing how we should go forward in 2006.
I would also like to add an item to the agenda.
All right, let's do that one. The problem with, yes.
Kind of a point of order.
Please.
The agenda item, is, as Mr. Weiskall expressed, it sounds very vague. I'm wondering if he would accept as the agenda item sharing an authority of local elections committee.
That's what we do already.
As that agenda item.
We already do that.
Excuse me, Melinda. Let's go in order here. Terry, you're suggesting a revision of Ted's...
Rather than the item be reviewing minutes, it should be a discussion of the authority and the chairing of local elections committees. That ought to encompass what everybody wants.
Right.
As long as we can use...
Wait, I'm not sure. You're not talking about changing the bylaws.
That's true.
For the local election committee for the elections, that authority is in the local election supervisor. That's the bylaws.
And if they choose to work locally, hey, with the group that's already set.
Yeah, let's talk about putting it on the agenda as an item. Ted, do you accept that description of the agenda item?
As long as the intention is to use these minutes as a reference point for where we are, as long as we can use these minutes as a reference point.
All right, my problem with that is that we have one member I know of who does not have access to the minutes just now. His computer isn't working.
So I think we need to get,
and you just posted this to the list about 5 minutes before, 10 minutes before the meeting.
We could always put it in the next meeting.
I wonder if we can just put it down for new business at the bottom of the list and postpone it till the next meeting.
Carolyn, are you talking to me?
I am. Thank you.
I think those of us who are looking at our computers and can see this can agree that we are at least recognizing that what we're seeing is what is there, and for that person who is not in a position to look at it, they can take our word for the fact, especially if two or more of us see the exact same wording. That's not going to be the issue. The issue is who chairs these meetings and what kinds of decisions are made by committees.
Well, let's not get into the substance, please. I just want to talk about the question of whether or not we can look at it tonight without having read the minutes, without having seen them, and with one member not even able to look at them during the meeting. So if we put it at the end of the agenda, most likely we won't get to it anyway, but I would like to put it on the agenda as the first item, perhaps, for next time, for the next meeting.
I think we need to discuss this tonight. I wasn't going to get into the substance of it, but you were the one who said, well, we don't have the substance in front of us. Well, I'm saying that the substance is not important. It's the implications of what is stated here, and whether somebody is reading this or not is not really relevant. It's not to go over and attack what transpired 2 years ago. It is to make sure we do things correctly this time. And that,
the
I think,
that
is timely.
The fact that a supervisor approved of everything.
I have, pretty much what I'm saying is that I would like to put it on the agenda for next week. If you'd like to appeal the ruling of the chair, I think, which clearly you do, then I think we need to take a vote on it.
Are you saying next week is what you just said?
Next month, the next agenda, the next meeting. I think maybe, I'm looking at this, maybe we need to approve the agenda before we amend it. Am I correct in that, Ted?
Right.
There is no agenda approved at this point, and
yes,
we're not amending.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Should we approve it and then start amending it by adding your motion?
Well, I'm going to appeal the ruling of the chair.
Sure.
Members have a right to add items to the agenda.
Sure they do, but the question
item belongs in new business, which we probably won't get to.
Uh-huh. But no, my point was procedural. We have not approved the agenda.
Don White.
Hello, Don. Can we add an item to the agenda before approving it?
Let's make that two items.
Madam Chair,
I had a question for Terry. Terry, your opinion? Can we add items?
We add items to the agenda before approving
before
the
report. All right, good enough. All right, because I've had some...
Make that two items.
All right, then we'll add Ted's item, and then, Melinda, what is yours?
My item is this. I question, given the fact that we are shortly coming upon the time where we will be having declared candidacies, I would like for us to consider the wisdom. One thing that we make it... part of our business at KPFT is that a person is not allowed to vote if they're a candidate. I like to know the wisdom of having members of possible candidates on this committee.
On this committee?
That will be running, that will be making decisions toward elections.
Yes, okay, that's fine. That may come up, actually. I was hoping that...
And I like very much to consider that. I think it's a very important matter of objectivity.
All right, so we'll make that the second item of new business. Right now, new business is blank.
Would you like me to write that and send to an email?
I would appreciate that. Thank you.
I'll do that.
I would, too, I'm sure.
You bet.
Thank you. All right, any other changes to the agenda as we distributed it? All right, hearing no objection, then we'll approve the agenda. The next item, then, is the next meeting date. And I understand that KPFA is holding another LSB meeting on the third Sunday, and I'm not sure that means we should either start later or move to another date or just expect some overlap. What is your pleasure on that? Ordinarily, the meeting would be on August 20th, which is the third Sunday at 8.
You're from LeBarn.
You know, it's with me to have the meeting. I mean, I'm just exhausted, but, you know, it's fine to, I think, to go ahead and have the meeting. It's the Sundays are proving to be a better day, I think, than the, so we're trying to do this. You know, I talked to Richard. Richard will be on shortly. I left Mary. So, again, it's fine with me.
Okay, could whoever is on the street there mute their phone? We're getting a siren. Thank you. So you think that it'd be all right to have them both on the same date and leave it on the third Sunday?
It's with me.
Uh-huh. Any other changes or objections?
Point of information?
Yes.
I was disrupted, and I didn't hear the date that you had...
The third Sunday, as usual, the 20th of August.
Let me see if I can...
That's our usual point. Our usual date.
Okay, thank you.
All right, hearing no objection then, that will be our next meeting on the 20th at 8 p.m., as usual, unless there are some wishes to change the time as well. All right, hearing no objection then, we'll leave it at the 20th at 8 p.m. The next item is minutes from June 18th, and we do not have a complete set of minutes yet. So that's 15 minutes saved right there. I think we have no... minutes to approve. The next item then is reports, and there are four workgroup reports, but before that, Les Radke. Les, would you like to give your report first?
Certainly.
We've left an hour, and I don't know how much time you want of that for Q&A, but if we need to extend, we certainly will.
Should I start?
Yes, please. Why don't you go ahead?
Okay.
Thank you.
Let me give you my little table. Hello?
Three.
Hello?
Yes. Please let me remind everyone to please mute your phones if you're in the street or in a noisy location.
I think what we just heard was Serene announcing that she was on the call.
Yes, and somebody has background noise going really, really loud. Thank you. Liz, why don't you go ahead?
Let me read some of the items I'd like to go over, and it's your choice. I'll try to keep my report rather short. I could either go over the whole thing and then we could question, or I could go over items one by one. I actually have six items that I wanted to go over. One is an informational item. There's another problem with Choice Plus Pro, the program, but that's an informational thing that's being taken care of. I just want people to be aware of it because if it comes up, it is being taken care of. So that's one item. I want to talk about the process of designing, mailing, and counting the campaign materials, question of local election supervisors, question of the unpaid staff, question of the paid staff, and then
yes.
Question of the listener membership. So those are the things I want to go over. Anything else people want to talk about, we can talk about after that, because these are relatively short reports. So.
Okay.
Shall I go over the whole thing, and then people can question depending on where the questions and maybe controversy is?
Yes, go
or,
ahead.
Okay.
However you organize it.
Just the question of Choice Plus Pro. Again, Art and Jack have been, working diligently on this, and I say that sincerely because it's about time that we got all the bugs worked out of this program. It turns out that there's another little bug in the program. It's not really a bug. It's called a feature. It has to do with how ties are dealt with. Some of you may have already run into this. It turns out that the way the program designed the single transferable vote is that if there's a tie, it looks at previous rounds to see at which round one candidate got more first place votes than the other. And if it finds a previous round where a tie, where if you have two people who are tied for last place and you have to eliminate one, what the program does is it looks earlier and it says if one person got more first place votes than the other one, it automatically assigns the winner to the person who had the most first place votes at any previous round. That's how the program works. This seems to conflict with the bylaws, both as I read them, Art reads them, and Jack reads them, which is that if there's a tie, there should be you should have a lot chosen. You should draw straws or something. And Steve Willis, I've talked to Steve Willis, we're going to change the program so it complies with the bylaws. So I just that's more informational because that's being done. And if there's any other bugs, I mean, Art and Jack are not going away. They've been diligent on this, and it's really good because we want this program to do exactly what the purpose told it does and to work exactly the way we want it to work. And it will. There's no question about that.
Thank you. Just an interruption, Les. Pound one is mute, so please, anyone who is outside on a cell phone, would you mute your phone for us? Thank you. Okay, go ahead, Les.
Okay. The question of designing mailing and counting the campaign materials, I know that you spent a lot of time talking to groups. It turns out that the group that did the first two mailings at KPFA for the balloting, putting on the barcodes, et cetera, was a group called KP Graphics. And they have put in a bid to do the designing of the ballot, the designing of the candidate statement, and the putting on of barcodes. And they're doing all of this in conjunction with us, and we'll get the mailing out October 16th. We've worked with them for years, and they've never been late on a mailing. The person is very, very strict about this. It's a worker-owned cooperative, and all the members are also members of Pacifica. I always felt we should stay with them. The other thing that we're doing is we're taking the same machine that was used last year, the scanning machine, exactly the same machine, and I met with Canon, and what they're going to do is sell us five machines, one for each station, plus the software, which would read the ballot exactly the same as last time, feed them into the computer, and it would spit it out, both creating CDs, which we'll leave. This time we will leave these CDs at the station, just if anybody wants them, as well as the ballot totals. And all of this is being done, this whole thing is being done for $120,000, including the cost of mailing. That compares with Election Services, which wants $185,000 for the same thing. It's just too much of a cost differential. I also feel that we're going to be getting better service from KP Graphics, both quality as well as the cost that I'm looking at. So that's that process. Local election supervisors. There's just letting you know who was appointed. The appointments are in conjunction with Greg Guma. They give us the power to appoint these folks. I'm just letting you know. But the people who have been appointed are Tracy Rosenberg for KPFA, Casey Peters, so some many of you know, for KPFK. Atiano Davis for WBAI, and Ikisu Austin for WPFW. I'm still interviewing, including three people today, after I get off of this, for Houston, because there's several people who talk to me about it, and I'm still going over the Houston question. I'm hoping to have that done by tomorrow. All of these will be up. Some of these names are already up on web pages. They'll all be up on web pages by Tuesday with the email address and the voicemail. so that we can actually get started on the election materials. The question of unpaid staff, it really varies from station to station. I have to say that Houston did a probably way overblown job. They gave me every piece of information about every staff person, but it really is interesting looking at it. It's easy to verify the unpaid staff there. The same thing with KPFK and WBAI, Ken Nash and the Unpaid Staff Organization, sent me a list which has everybody's program on it, and again, is verifiable. So the two stations that still don't have hours down for people and that still are being completed are KPFA. I have lists of people with their programs in KPFA. And WPFW, where I just have a list of people but not programs, and I'm working with Ron Pinchback on that. Question of paid staff. I never even thought about paid staff until I was just asked a question yesterday. It had to do, or today even, it had to do with what determines paid staff? What if a person is paid for an hour a week and is included on the paid staff list? And what I've done is there's the national office cuts these checks. Contract employers are not seen as paid staff, but everybody else is. I just never thought about if there's any limitation that on unpaid staff, and I haven't really thought about it very much, because I simply assumed that that was one list, you know, that was easy to look at and was accurate. But I may have to think about that again. And then finally, there's the listener membership. At KPFA, Tracy Rosenberg actually did a lot of that work for Media Alliance, and she's actually taken the list. And she's going through in a pre-dupe. The group that I hired to mail out the list actually does deduping of lists, but we need a little bit more than that. And what we need more is to come out with a list of names that look like they might be, for example, if there's an address where we're sending five ballots, or some confusion about whether two different names are the same. What we're doing at KPFA, given that it's the largest listener list, it's about 30,000 names, is it looks like we're going to have several hundred names that are ambiguous. And if we do, we're going to just sit down and call all several hundred people and try to straighten out the list that way. I'm trying to come up with a formula and then have all the local election supervisors do that at the station to try to reduce what's happening with these lists, because a lot of it is data input is wrong. They got the wrong name, the wrong address, whatever. So we are trying to take care of that and come up with a system to try to reduce what's happened the last couple of elections. That's where we're at. I'm giving a shorthand report of this, because I'd rather have most of the conversation be about questions or comments or whatever.
Carol Wolf from WFW, can I ask a question?
Absolutely. That's what we're here for.
I'm the chair of the LSB, and this will be the first time I've gone through the elections. Are there written guidelines for chairs, or do have a role at all? I mean, I'm thinking that we want to encourage wide participation in people applying to be candidates. But are there, can you steer me to any written guidelines?
I will be sending that out to the LSVs, because some of the guidelines do affect them, and I'll be doing that next week.
Okay, great.
But I wanted to make sure, I mean, this is actually going to be coming through the local election supervisor. In WPFW, for example, Ikusu Austin is meeting with Ron Pinchback this Monday at noon, and going over some of these things with him.
Good. Okay, thank you. And one other question. You mentioned a website where the name of the election supervisors are. Can you tell me what that web page is? What's the address, the URL?
Well, for WPF, it's at each local website. What you'll find right now is if you go to WPFW.org, the first thing on there is the job description. I'm removing that and replacing it now that I've hired Ikusu. I'm replacing that with his name and some different material.
Okay, thank you.
Les, I had a question, if I may.
we know Tracy Rosenberg and Casey Peters from their reports and so on from last time, but especially the other two names I do not know. Could you tell us a little bit about these supervisors?
Well, let me ask a general question. Do you think it would be helpful to post a little biography of the local election supervisors? We haven't done that, but perhaps we should.
Yes, definitely.
Atieno is the chair of something called the Committees of Correspondence for Democracy and Socialism. She is actually going to quit that job and transfer over. She's going to be a little bit late, but I'm working with her starting today, as a matter of fact. I just got off on a conversation with her.
Mm-hmm.
She's very familiar with WBAI. She's talked to several people and understands a little bit about that. Most of her activity has been in the African-American community. She has, but I think having a little biography at least will give you a hint of where she's coming from. Ikusa Austin lived...
Excuse me.
Not, pardon?
Les, excuse me. This is Ted from Houston.
Yes.
And I think it's wonderful that you're talking about posting biographies on these people for the sake of time. This means absolutely nothing to me, and I don't think it even has any relevance to me in Houston if you're talking about another area of the country.
I agree.
That the posting on the website won't suffice. I'd really like to get through the agenda of tonight's meeting.
I'm sorry, but Ted, we had allowed an hour for that, and I'm allowing him to organize that time any way he likes, and if the group wants to lengthen it, we certainly may do that, but right now there's an hour allotted for this subject. So
I actually agree with Ted, though.
Suggest.
I think the biographies are helpful, and I think the other mm-hmm. thing is to make sure that there's an immediate both meeting, not only with the management and staff, but also with the folks in the local station board. I will do that. I'm really emphasizing that and trying to emphasize collaboration.
Thank you.
Carolyn, if I can say one more thing, and that is I do have some questions for Les. I think that his time is extremely valuable. This just isn't where it's at. But, that information, we'll get it, and I'm glad. I have two questions for him, but I will wait my turn.
All right. Anyone else have any questions? Well, Ted, I guess go ahead with your question.
Okay. When the election committees begin meeting, where do their minutes go? What kind of transparency? And are these, in your estimation, are these committees autonomous entities who make decisions that are final, or which Robert says committees can't make decisions, but our bylaws may say that in this case they do. So that's my first question.
Well, the bylaws, let's be clear about the bylaws, because if you look at the role of the local election supervisors and the national election supervisor, there's actually some contradiction in how these things are set out. But what is not a contradiction is that theoretically they make all the decisions for the election process. The idea was to remove this from any body, any governance body in Pacifica. So neither the Pacifica National Board, unless these bylaws are changed, nor the local station boards have any control over these decisions that are made. And if you read what it says about the local election committees, is that the first I want to talk formally, and then I want to talk informally, because there's two different answers to your question. And both of them obtained here in Northern California. So formally, the local election supervisor runs the committee and makes the decision. That's the formal thing, and that is in the bylaws. It's very direct. They can determine who's on that committee and who's not on that committee. There's some overlap in terms of the local election supervisor and the national election supervisor. If you read the job descriptions, there's overlap. For example, it says that the national election supervisor will design the ballots, and et cetera. And when you read the local election supervisor, they also will design the ballots. Obviously, you can't have two people designing the ballots. So there's some overlap. But that's the formal part of it. The informal part is clearly having as much collaboration as possible. Ultimately, it's the local election supervisor who is responsible for the decisions that are made. So if it comes, for example, to a vote that the local election supervisor votes one way and the committee votes the other, the bylaws clearly state it's the local election supervisor's vote that counts. Saying that,
Richard.
What happened, you know, when the local election supervisor does not collaborate closely with the local election committee, not very much is going to be done. If I don't collaborate with the National Election Committee, I'm simply not going to get support. I mean, we're not going to be supportive of each other, and we both want these elections to proceed. So there's the formal part of it, which is that the local election committee actually makes these decisions, that the local election supervisor makes these decisions, but there certainly has to be collaboration with the local election committee. Saying that, one of the reasons I'm going over that is that I've already come out with a statement to the local election supervisors that they will determine the membership, because it's going to vary from place to place. But one of the things that is true is that no candidate that's running on the local station board can be part of the local election committee, period. That's not even a question. That's off, and that will be clarified to the local station board this week. I mean, that simply doesn't pass muster. That was actually the whole point of setting up this election process the way it was, is to make sure that candidates who are running, it turns out no candidates who are running can take part in this process, but it applies a little bit earlier, as of July 25th, to candidates who are running from the local station board. That does not pass muster, and that'll be the case. So, Ted, did that answer your question?
Yes, it does. But there's the further question, and that is, when they have a meeting and the minutes are produced from that meeting, what happens to those minutes?
Oh.
I don't ask easy questions because those I know the answers to.
Well, there's two part. Reason I'm pausing is I'm trying to think what's been done in the past, and I'm not sure what's been done in the past. I think it's been very eclectic.
In our particular instance at KPFT, within hours after they were given to me, I've had them posted on the website. Every one of our minutes are posted, and also our agendas.
I think that that's proper. I think that that's what has to happen at each of the stations. I mean, what you just said.
That's what I do.
That brings up a third question, and that is the I. Who is the I that should be posting these, and does the local station board have to accept the posting of these minutes from that local election committee?
If I may interrupt, I think there might be some confusion as to which committee we're talking about. Ted,
we don't question the minutes of other committees.
Excuse me, Melinda. Are you talking about the board committee or the committee that the local election supervisor has?
No. We're only talking about local election supervisor. The reason I'm saying that is I'm not answering the other questions. The other questions I'm not involved with. So we're talking about the local election committee of the local election supervisor. It seems to me that whoever puts these together, that the local election supervisor is the one. This is off. I haven't thought about this, honestly.
Well, that's fine. I don't even necessarily want an answer tonight. I would much rather you think about it and get the input of the executive director, because I think the bylaws do not address this. They are
no,
mute.
They don't. I know that, because this, believe me, I've been going over these and over these. My offhand tendency is that whoever does the minutes, that they be approved by the local election supervisor, because that person's responsible. But I appreciate that you're going to give me a little time to formalize this.
Actually, with our local board at KPFT, our local supervisor had so much on his agenda that he basically, granted, he was involved in the voting, but he oversaw the minutes. But he saw that they were all in good shape, and as such, he let me take care of that. That was part of the duties in which we worked in collaborative manner.
Mm-hmm.
He had enough going on because we had some really bad records with our local station, and he had a whole big can of worms thrown in his lap, and so there were certain responsibilities. I also was the one that got the beer keg for our party. I was also the one that got the barbecue, and I also took care of a lot of the basic care and sundry. But as far as the actual, you know, record keeping, as far as the ballot counting and that sort of thing, that was wholly under the supervisor, and we worked as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very happy to say I hope you find somebody as cool as Bobby Muldoon, because I think we had one tremendous team going on.
Mm-hmm.
I had another question. Does anyone else have questions? Can we have a little stack here?
Terry on stack.
Terry, all right. Terry, why don't you go ahead?
This is Harrison. I'd like to talk to
Harrison. All right.
Yeah. To the best of my knowledge, since the local elections committees were not governance committees, there was no requirement for minutes.
That's correct.
So I suspect that ours just did work and didn't take minutes and never posted anything. And if they had wanted to post them, they would have had trouble getting access to the website in order to post them.
Mm-hmm. I am, by the way, I am trying to work out personal relations, both with the general managers and with the webmasters. And, you know, I've been successful in getting the election information posted already on every website, on every station.
Wonderful.
And I'm hoping that helps the local election supervisor. I know that there are some places, Angela in Washington particularly, seem to have a great deal of difficulty getting up-to-date information there. So we're trying to work on that. And you know, there are some stations that have been responsive immediately. And that's also wonderful.
Okay, Harrison.
My concern is about the neutrality of the elections committees, the local elections committees. First of all, I think it's important to realize that this committee is slightly different from the local elections committees that are in the bylaws. And the requirement that the local election supervisors appoint people to their committees that are neutral parties seems to me to exclude people who are on the LSBs. I think that we all recognize that you want to get people on the LSB who are going to vote with you, and if we have members of the LSB on the local elections committee, I think that that is going to make it more likely that those committees and their decisions will be controversial and lead to trouble in the long run. And I think, Les, you've already said that people on this committee can't be running, but clearly there are going to be people on this committee who are all of the people on this committee are going to be LSB members. But I don't think that, you know, my personal opinion is that that would be unfortunate to have LSB members on the local elections committees. And I guess that's not a question, but
I can give an answer even if it isn't a question, because I've already made a ruling that is pretty formal on this. The second part of it is I'm giving this option to the local election supervisors. One of the reasons for that is the KPFA, when I made my initial ruling was that no member of the LSB could be on the committee, and I had several objections, including from LA as well as KPFA land, that this was too restrictive. And so my decision was that this, you know, it varies from place to place, and the local election supervisor's job is to make sure that everybody on that committee operates in a neutral way, and insofar as they don't, they're off. Now, clearly, a candidate who's running, there's a compromise there in terms of fairness. But my feeling is the local election supervisor is on the ground in the area, and that person should be making the decision. So there's going to be slightly different decisions made. Some are uniform, like running candidates can't be on the committee, but some will be slightly different. There will probably be some areas where local station board members will not be on at all, and there's going to be some where there's going to be some exceptions to that. If that's a problem, then the local election supervisors and I'll talk about it and see if we can come up with something that's less controversial. But I am giving that power to the local election supervisor.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? I have a question about the staff list. You said you had a list of names and programs affiliated. How are you going to vet the hours worked? This is a really thorny question. And, for instance, when you have a large number of people in a collective, how it doesn't seem reasonable if they all work the requisite number of hours to produce 1 hour a week if you have 10 or 15 members in a collective.
Yeah.
How are you going to solve that? How are you going to decide who gets
well,
ballots?
However,
and...
okay, the first thing is however I decide, I mean, I'm home free on this because however I decide, I'm going to be criticized.
So, that's true.
So I'm not looking for a way where I won't be criticized. That's straight out. Mm-hmm. So the way I've approached this is I've taken programs and I've sorted in Excel by program name the number of people. If there's a large number of people at the station in a particular program, the local election supervisor is going to have to talk to the producer of the program and come up with hours for those and make sure it matches. If there's not, if there's like a program and you have one person listed for that program, and we find out that one person does produce the program, either by looking on the website or talking to the producer, that takes care of it. So that's one part of it. The other part of it is that there are collectives that are rather large. The formal unpaid staff organization and the interim general manager at KPFA decided is two people from a collective producing a program get to vote. The person who's the primary organizer of the collective and the person who's the primary producer of the program. I'm willing to accept that, and I've already gotten some negative feedback on that. But, I would like to work, here's one answer. I'd like to work out something so that every national election supervisor doesn't go through the same damn question every time. Mm. We need to solve this. And not everybody in the collective is going to work. There are hours that are mentioned in the bylaws in terms of whether it's unpaid staff, for example, at WBAI, the unpaid staff organization, you'd have to work 10 hours a month for at least 2 months. And so if that isn't the case, then they're not a part of the unpaid staff, regardless of, if they put in a few hours, that's not enough. And as we already know, there's at least the one case in Los Angeles where the person who's regularly on the does not put in 30 hours in 3 months, and so is not part of the unpaid staff and ran as a listener, representative, and is on the local station board. I think the bylaws should change. I think anybody who works on a regular program should, in fact, be considered part of the unpaid staff, period, not ours. But that's not I follow the bylaws. The bylaws say at three of the stations, it's 30 hours in 3 months. If they don't put in 30 hours in 3 months, they're not part of the unpaid staff, straight out. At WBNI and KPFA, they're unpaid staff organizations, and I follow their rules.
Carrie?
Ted.
Mm-hmm. And then Ted, maybe,
Terry.
Or somewhere.
Yeah. I just wanted to give Les the opportunity to correct an error. When you said two members of the collective would get to vote, what you meant, isn't it, is that two would get to vote in the staff category, assuming
yes.
that all collective members would get to vote.
Yes. Thank you. Particularly given that people are listening to this. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Can you restate that?
At KPFA land, right now, if there's a collective, two of those collective members get to vote in the unpaid staff. As members of the unpaid staff. The others could vote as listeners. And the two people who would vote would be the people that the collective decide is the primary organizer of the collective and the primary person responsible for producing programs.
But the definition in the bylaws is,
what is it,
10 hours every 3 months? What is the definition for KPSA?
The problem here, that's right, if they put in that much time, but the collectives don't. There's no collective that puts in enough time. Collectives at most produce a program a week, many one every 2 weeks. And so the question is, when we sat down, if you have 10 members of a collective producing a program every 2 weeks, even if you give 9 hours of time for every hour of production, it simply doesn't reach that level. Not when you realize that all the members of the collective are working on those programs.
Okay, I'm not in front of a computer now. I'm just asking what was the rule for KPFA? Is it in fact 30 hours a year or something?
30 hours a year.
Okay, thanks.
Don White.
Yes, Don, go ahead.
I'd like to ask three very quick questions in a row. One, the people who qualify as voting members by volunteering, is that information coming to you from GMs or volunteer coordinators, or how is that happening? My second question, guidelines for candidate behavior. Here in LA, there were decisions made about candidate behavior. For instance, one candidate would call call-in programs. At the time she was a candidate, she didn't give her last name, but she had a very distinct first name, and her voice was easily recognizable. She didn't exactly campaign, but it was kind of like on-air time. And the third question has to do with a process in place from the get-go when people report they did not receive their ballot. I think in the last few elections, it has been resolved, but I'm just wondering if we're looking at that in advance so that these complaints of I didn't get my ballot can be handled in a kind of routine way.
Yeah. I'll start with the last one because it's the easiest. The best way was a couple of the web pages simply had a form on it saying fill out this form on the web page itself, and it also what was announced was a number to call in to report, and along with that, we'll make sure that there's, that they report the time, the date, and what happened. That will at least be on all the web pages. And I think in this day and age, I mean, it's fewer and fewer people who don't have access to web pages, to be honest. I mean, it wasn't much more true today even than 5 years ago. But we'll also make some announcements on that. So we'll make sure that that is on the web pages and that that's very clear about how they report these. What I'm telling all the local election supervisors is their job is not to monitor. Their job is to make sure that the elections are fair. They're administering and they're supervising. When they get these reports, they have to make sure that they monitor them every day, that they monitor the reports every day, but they don't monitor the station because people who are listening, once they understand that these elections are underway, we'll call in and say they heard such and such. The candidate behavior, I'd actually like a discussion of that. I know last year it was decided that a candidate, as long as they didn't give their name, their last name, it was all right for them to call in. I feel uncomfortable with that, but I'm not quite sure how to handle that. If a candidate calls in and is already, people know the candidate's voice, I'm not sure if that really does add to the candidate stature or not. I don't know whether I should reverse that decision or not. I'm not totally uncomfortable with it, but I'm not totally comfortable with it. Let's go back to that after I answer the question about the volunteers. Some stations are very accurate they have a volunteer coordinator. They write this down. They write down the hours, and it's easy to check. There are a couple of stations that are fairly sloppy on this. They have not, they don't look at the volunteer list as having anything to do with voting, for one thing. So it's a very sloppy list with no hours. When I found out how bad this is at a couple stations, I'm not sure exactly how to handle this, other than if the volunteer list is small enough, I suppose calling up the volunteers. I don't know how to do that because, you know, a person comes in, they sign in, they don't put down their time in or their time out. They do that, for example, at KPFA, so you just look at that, and you got the hours, and it's signed in and signed out with a supervisor. But if you don't have somebody doing this with a supervisor, if they just come in and they volunteer and they put their name on a list, I guess you could call them up and ask them if you have any information about their phone number. But even that's a little bit sloppy. The only thing I'm suggesting is that we tighten this up at all stations. It would be good for each station, and I'm telling the station managers this, to know who the people are who regularly volunteer and spend some time. It's not just an election thing. It's just, you know, it's part of management of a station that it would be really important to have those lists in order. And they're not in a couple of stations. But going back to candidate behavior, I would almost like to get suggestions. I mean, if there was a consensus, for example, on the committee about that, I'd be open to just running with that consensus. And if there's not a consensus, I still want to think about it a little bit. I'm not sure how to handle it. I don't think it's if a person just calls into a show because they've been doing it regularly anyway, and they don't give their name, and they're not, you know, the two conditions last year, they don't give their name and they don't say they're running, but they call into a show. Should they be penalized? That's the question.
Yeah, we have not discussed that. We can't offer you an opinion, much less a consensus.
No.
But I think that definitely needs to go on our list of items. Don, does that answer all of your questions?
Yes. I just might say that I'm sympathetic with us because I don't have a strong view on this either, except that during the campaign in Los Angeles, there were some people who were upset, thinking it was a violation. When they heard this individual on the air, I think she may have given her first name, which is not a very common first name. But I don't have a strong view either because I don't think it does enhance stature. I mean, people are not going to vote on the fact that I just heard her on the radio. So I'm not raising it because it's a big, big issue with me, but it did present a minor issue in the last election. And I might add parenthetically, I think the choice here at KPFK for the local director is a good one. I think he did a relatively good job the last time around.
Carolyn,
I'd like to be able to stack.
I have a question, Carolyn, but I'll let Melinda go first.
Yes, Melinda, then Ted.
Mm-hmm. Harrison, I'd like to get on spec.
Harrison, all right.
Yes, we kind of ran across a rather unusual circumstance in terms of behavior at the last election that was totally unlike anything that they had anticipated. We had an instance where an individual, basically, they had PSAs advertising a movie. And then what they did was one of our candidates took advantage of the circumstance, this movie having drawn people ostensibly from our listeners to that, and he interrupted the movie to do a basically a pitch for himself. He did like an interruption of the movie. It was one of those local political type movies, and he got up and pitched himself with no other candidates nearby. What made this particularly intriguing was, granted they were not on the air, but this person had uninterrupted, unchallenged position. And this individual had quite verbally, at a 9 months earlier, had gone against someone who had gone on the air and acted in this manner. So what I want to know is this, should we just look at that? Or should we consider quite seriously when somebody uses our airways as a means of, shall we say, serving as an arrow to take them to somewhere where they basically would have a free forum.
Yeah, the issue here is that any candidate who uses any station resources is under the fair campaign provision. And all candidates, if a candidate comes in and says, I want to Xerox off 1,000 copies of something, all candidates have to be notified, all candidates, that they have the, if that's allowed, that they have the permission to Xerox off 1,000 copies of something. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if something goes on a web page, if that person made the announcement and part of it went on the radio, that is a violation of the fair campaign thing. The problem is what happens when you don't use station resources. In other words, you hear something on the station and you realize, oh, this is going to be a large group of people. We're having a meeting about the Palestinian, about the Israeli invasion of Lebanon, and I'm going to go there and make an announcement. There's nothing that I can do about that. That's called free speech. I mean, that's, you know, there's absolutely nothing. There are other things like that. There are, I mean, this happened in KPFA and will happen in this area again, where people will spend their own money either on mailings or on sending things out or whatever. As long as it doesn't use station resources or the resources that are used are, that it's not a passive thing. It's not like somebody said, can I do this? But if somebody does something with the station and it's allowed, all candidates have to be notified of that. That is, that's going to be absolutely strict. All candidates will be notified if somebody gets use of something of station resource. The other thing that you're mentioning, though, with this movie, there's nothing. That's way outside of it because they did not themselves advertise the movie. If they did advertise the movie and showed up, that would be a violation. But if they did not, if they just showed up...
That's exactly what happened.
What happened?
The individual who got up and did the commercial was a member of a group. And they basically, they and actually a member of the board got up and they advertised, they put together the PSA.
Well, I'd be cautious about how, this I'd like to talk to you more about because, not for that incident, but just to make a general ruling. It would depend.
Sure.
It would depend because this is, I mean, if you, if you have a collaborative effort, if you have one group that, you know, it's, We'll talk about this offline. Well, I'll call you up about this.
Cool.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Thank you. I'm going to put myself on the stack after Ted and Harrison.